Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 108 of Nerd Pride Radio. 108, it's actually a pretty cool number. It's 9 dozen. The first non-trivial two-digit multiplication fact that I ever memorized when I was a kid. Well, except maybe probably 12 dozen. I probably knew 12 times 12 was 144, but when I learned that 9 times 12 was 108, I don't know, it particularly tickled me that I had that one memorized, because we weren't required to memorize anything above 10. So I thought that one was super cool. But also, because 108 is a number that has so many factors, it shows up a lot in religion as being a very significant number in lots of places. But more important than that, 108 is the number of stitches on a Major League Baseball and the number of cards in an Uno deck. So there you go. 108 is very relevant to your life now. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I'm awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, and our sponsor this week, it's the Gator Guy. Yeah. Traditional campfire is too complicated for you? Do you burn yourself every time you try and grab a flaming hunk of lumber out of the fire? Yeah, unsure of how to throw on fresh logs? Well, you just text the Gator Guy. He'll come over and take care of all of your campfire needs without you ever having to leave the comfort of your very own camp chair. So cool. We went this last weekend, well, yesterday, we went to Omaha for my wife's cousin's wedding, which was beautiful and fun, and we had family there from all over. Not everybody showed up, but enough people that we had a great time with people we hadn't seen in a while. And we wound up going outside because, all right, she had the wedding in a berry patch. It's a big thing. It's like a berry patch, and it's also a pumpkin patch, and it's depending on the season. There's lots of stuff out there, but it's one of these that it has kind of this fair amusement park sort of feel to it, because there's so much out there, including 3 or 4 wedding chapel things. I mean, they have lots of, I think there were 2 other weddings going on while we were there having the wedding we were on. They've got all, reception halls and all these facilities. And because it's October, the pumpkins are out and they've got a haunted theme going. And so there were haunted hayrack rides going around all night. So if you were outside, you could hear the witch cackling off in the woods, and they'd have cannons going off to startle the people on the ride, and all sorts of moaning and groaning. And it was actually a really cool atmosphere for a wedding reception, to tell you the truth. And one of the things that they had outside this beautiful rustic looking reception hall is outside there was a campfire going. I mean, just we walked outside and there's a campfire. So, okay, so we're all standing around it, and it's got a big old pile of wood next to it so that if we wanted to throw some extra logs on, we could. And we wound up spending, we missed all of the dances. We missed almost everything going on inside because my wife's whole family, we all just stood outside around the fire like we were out camping and hung out just chatting, having a good time. And after we were there for about a half hour, suddenly this guy pulls up on a gator, one of those little mini vehicles, utility vehicles that they use, and he pulls up on the gator, and he hops out, and he's got some apparently fireproof gloves on. He comes over, and he starts grabbing logs out of our fire and rearranging the fire so it'll burn better, adds a little log to it, hops in his gator, drives away. we found out that's his job that night, is that there's a bunch of campfires all the way around this compound, whatever it is, the berry patch. And it's his job to go around maintaining the fires all night for the guests. And we're like, I mean, you got to know my wife's family. These are camping people. These are, you know, campers and hunters, and these are people who know their outdoor skills. I mean, you guys know, you know, I'm involved with the Boy Scouts, and you would think that would give me some sort of expertise or something, but not really. I'm an amateur compared to these guys. They know what they're doing. And yet here we are all sitting around just like the lazy, most privileged way to enjoy a campfire, that we sit back and we just wait for him to come around and start adjusting things for us. And it's like, we even started, you know, teasing him a little bit that we'd see the gator starting to drive by, and one of the guys would stand up there going, "Oh, I'm so cold over here." And so sure enough, the gator would pull up and the guy would get out and build up our fire for us. And we gave him crap, but he was a lot of fun. And it was just, you got to imagine the atmosphere of it was, imagine the Howells from Gilligan's Island going out camping and sitting around a campfire and Lovey, does it appear that the fire's burning down? "Well, I think so. Did you have the number for the gator guy?" "Oh, hold on, I'll punch him up." And then you sit back in your chair and you just wait for someone to come up and adjust your fire for you. It was really bizarre. But I mean, the gator guy even came around. He happened to pull up just as some girl from inside was out there trying to entice all of us to come in and go dancing, which none of us were going to do. But she had these little glow sticks, and she was, you know, offering to hand them out to anyone who was willing to come in and dance. And she actually got the gator guy to do it. So, I mean, he's like waving around glow sticks and doing a little jig for us. It was cute. So, anyway, that was our experience. There was actually a lot more that went on, but the gator guy is really the best story out of the whole night. He is just, I mean, it was really so cool to have someone come around and just, "Oh, yeah, yes, boy, could you tend that fire for us? Thank you. All right." We should have tipped him. Oh, I wish we had tipped the campfire boy. Oh, well. This week, I am not going to do a meticulously plotted portion of this podcast because I just did a podcast on Wednesday, and I've kind of run out of material. There's just nothing. There's just nothing in the pocket mod this week. I went through and I started crossing off everything I did last week, and I'm like, "Oh, yeah, there's nothing in here that doesn't require an awful lot of work." And I just, I'm not getting it put together yet. So I'll give you a couple of quick updates. That was terrible. And my voice won't do it today. Sorry. I don't know what I'm going to do. My wife will sit over there and giggle at me. Will she come over and do the updates for me? No. So, let's see. Oh, okay. Update number one. Updates. There, that's a little better. The Fantasy Movie League. Wow. The most exciting week ever. I swear. I gave you the update on Wednesday to let you know what we were doing in the game. And just the craziest week. And again, it's Fantasy Movie League. So if you're not playing, you're not really going to understand the excitement of it. But to watch the totals coming in this week, this weekend, deadline.com just keeps giving updates every few hours. They'll post up something new and let us know how the totals are rolling in. And the estimates they're giving, it's like, oh, it looks like Intern's going to win it. No, wait. Hotel Transylvania's going to win it. No, wait. And as we're watching the numbers go up and down, just exciting, really exciting. It's a neck and neck horse race is what this is. So if you are interested at all in movies and box office numbers and, you know, again, you put it together and you make some random guesses each week, post it up. You don't have to do a lot of work, but you can. This was really our best week ever. And I've got my money down on Hotel Transylvania to take it. Well, not my real money. My real money went to Martian, which Martian did really well. It did as well as I was hoping it would do. It's everything else did even better. Weird. So, it was a good week. But also, my other update is Fantastic Four. I talked last week about how to fix Fantastic Four, and I didn't get a chance to actually listen to my own episode until a couple of days later. So as I was listening and thinking about, you know, I'm always critiquing myself as I go. And I was listening to the Fantastic Four segment, and it got me to thinking about, hey, I wonder if you can add in a twist, you know, how so many comics now, they've found ways to revamp the characters as universes are reborn, or as they just want to change up a particular line. So, you know, we have, you know, 20 years ago it was Spider-Man's black costume, and recently we've seen the rise of a female Thor. We've seen, you know, some, you know, like Black Green Lantern many, many years ago. Ms. Marvel is a Muslim teenage girl, that kind of stuff. And I thought, okay, could we shake up Fantastic Four like that? Could we do some, you know, radical twist in the history of one of the original characters and come up with something different? I thought, wow, how interesting would Fantastic Four be if they rewrote it so that Sue Storm was a trans woman? And I thought, wow, that would be really interesting. But then I realized that no. Yeah, it would give her probably a cooler backstory, that there'd be a lot more that went on in her history before the Fantastic Four. But then I realized that it didn't necessarily have to change anything about her character if you didn't want it to. But I realized it would make Reed Richards a much more interesting person, because he seems so traditional and straight-laced and conservative. And the idea that if you kept everything else about the story the same except that Sue Storm happened to be a trans woman, then, all of a sudden Reed is a much more interesting person for being, you know, so open and accepting of that and being, you know, just... Which I'm sure if you ask Reed Richards now in the modern comics, I'm sure he would have no problem with gender issues or any of that. I'm sure he would be very PC and above board. But when you think back to the origins of these characters and the kind of, again, you know, straight-laced, conservative, you know, traditional 50s dad sort of image that Reed Richards has always portrayed, this makes him a much more interesting character. And so I mentioned this to Joel. And Joel thought about it for a little bit, and he agreed that that was pretty cool. And he said, but you know what would be even cooler? He said, what if you took the, and this would make a great, I think, alternative Fantastic Four. If they were still doing What If comics in Marvel, this would make a great What If. But he said, what if you took the Fantastic Four and you kept everything pretty much exactly the same, except that you reverse the genders of Sue and Reed, so that Sue is the brilliant scientist, the most intelligent person in the world, the one who is behind all of this and gets the stretchy powers, and Reed is just Sue's boyfriend who for some reason is along for the ride and then becomes the Invisible Man. How does that change the characters? And we're like, wow, that is a really interesting story arc to take Reed from, because the way Joel presents it, he said, so, you know, originally with Sue, before, you know, Sue eventually became a scientist in her own right and all of this, but originally Sue was a very traditional female character, and it was, you know, there was always that question of, really, you know, what is Sue doing there in the first place? Why does the most brilliant scientist in the world bring his girlfriend along for a mission to space where she then acquires superpowers? That doesn't make any sense to anybody. And so what if it was reversed and it was Reed who was in that position? Reed, who has always felt secondary to Sue and has always been kind of, you know, naturally invisible. He's just kind of, you know, he's just always there in the background, but not ever center stage. And now it's Reed who has powers, invisible powers that reflect that and give him a bunch of insecurity issues, wondering about his place in this team and his place in the world, in this relationship, and then have him have some growth and story arc where he realizes that you know he has his own worth, and then that would, you know, be reflected in the development of the powers, moving from just invisibility to the force field powers, etc. So the way Sue has done in the actual comics, where, I mean, Sue ultimately is the most powerful member of that group. Her powers by far outstrip everybody else. I mean, well, okay, Johnny can go supernova, I suppose. But you know, for him to exercise the full extent of his power, you know, he has to light the atmosphere on fire and probably destroy the Earth. So not as handy as Sue's force fields. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, it was just an interesting take and just playing. And I can see now why a lot of comic writers have chosen to do stuff like that and take characters in just such a completely different direction. And people say that, oh, it's some kind of, you know, PC trend and wanting to, you know, kowtow to certain interest groups or whatever. I'm like, no, it's because you can make a really interesting character by doing that. You can explore facets of this traditional character, facets of those powers or facets of that history that you wouldn't normally get a chance to look at by simply making them someone who is slightly different or someone who's very different. But it gives you a new way to explore that same traditional thing. Because, after 50 years of a character, 40 years of Spider-Man or 75 years of Superman, you've kind of done everything. and it's a way to mix it up. So anyway, but enough of that. Really, again, I got nothing prepared, so let's go Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog, holy blueberries, and sweet, sassy molassy. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you guys come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is truly about whatever you want it to be. And the first number we've come up with is number 5. Let me get my Pod-O-Matic list going. And number 5 is from Humongous. Hey, Humongous. Humongous says, have you played HeroScape? Well, yes, I've played HeroScape. For those of you who don't know, HeroScape came, I think it came originally from Wizards of the Coast, I think, but it was bought out by Hasbro, or it was, doesn't make any difference. It's owned by Hasbro now. And HeroScape is an awesome combat game using little miniatures, and it's the backstory behind it is supposedly you've got these gods that all have Asgardian names, but these superpowers that have been summoning heroes and villains from across time, space, and dimension to bring them all to this battlefield to battle for whatever glory and honor. Who cares? And so you wind up having angels and demons and robots and secret agents and all sorts of bizarre things from all sorts of, there's swords and there's sorcery and there's laser pistols and it's a million things. And you have little miniatures and you have a miniature combat system. And so, you'll play with your team of, anywhere from 3 to 12 to 20 guys on your side against your opponents who have the same. And it's just a cool game. Just a really fun game. We love it. Haven't played in ages, but love the game a lot. And Humongous continues that question with, do you use the minis for RPGs? Yes, we have. We did for quite a long time because they're so the miniatures that are about the right size for playing Dungeons and Dragons with or whatever game. And in addition to being the right size, they're beautifully painted. Most of them look really good, and so they're really cool and a lot of fun. The problem with them is that the bases of a HeroScape figure are slightly larger than the 1-inch hex map or 1-inch squares that we use. And so it is very difficult when you're dealing with close combat, especially for Pathfinder, which we play a lot. Your exact position makes a lot of difference. And so when you've got, 5 or 6 characters all engaged together in the middle of a combat, it's hard to get them lined up exactly on the right hexes because you can't put them right next to each other the way you want to. So we've switched to mostly using the paper stand-ups that we just print up at home and cut them out. So that's what we use most of the time, but we still have all the HeroScape figures right there next to the board. So in case I need a particular one, if I want to, there's sometimes that you want an effect that you just aren't going to get with a paper mini. So if I've got something that closely matches one of those figures, a giant or a troll or a dragon, or it's usually something big, something oversized, then we'll throw one of those on the map because it, again, it makes a real impression on the players. So I do use them, just not consistently and not often, because, again, most of the standard size figures are a little bit awkward. But that's it. 86. And 86 comes from... it's from Noah. All right. My son Noah sends in a question that says, what would you name a dragon if you could create one? All right, you know what, Noah? I don't know for sure because it depends on the kind of dragon I'm creating. Because, for example, I wouldn't normally think of naming a dragon Riddy Whipple. But apparently, if it's a fairy dragon, Riddy Whipple is a really fitting name and a lot of fun. So, again, depends on the type of dragon. But if we're talking your traditional large, fearsome sort of dragon, then I'm not quite sure. Because, you don't want to just name him Steve. But, do you give him a name from mythology? Do you call your dragon Thor? I mean, assuming that that your dragon is the sort of dragon that you're allowed to name. I mean, what if it's intelligent? Don't you want to just give it a chance to name itself? That, you know. But then, of course, man, this is such a tough question. You got any ideas, Lisa, on naming a dragon? Oh, yeah. What was the name of that one? I'm actually going to go with my wife's answer on this one. She said she would name her dragon Ragnarok because naming your dragon after the end of the world is pretty badass. So I'll go with that one. But, again, I have a tough time with names. One of the things I dislike most about being a dungeon master or game master is having to come up with names for stuff constantly. Because I get so picky about the names and I want them to sound authentic, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, make it sound like every name I've ever created. I mean, you know, having characters named Thag and Thog for your big brutish creatures. I've had a lot of Thags and a lot of Thogs in my games. And I've also had a lot of Bobs, because a lot of times I can't come up with a name. I'm like, okay, yeah, Bob, whatever. I found out that if I just let my characters, or the players, name stuff, because, okay, you guys are you're entering a new village. This is the town of, and I wait for them, and they'll give me a name, and then I write down whatever it is. It turns out that anytime I let them name anything, it has the word black in it. And so I pointed this out to them, and now they think it's so funny that they insist on it. So, you know, we've been to the Black Forest and Blackwater and Blacktown and Black Swamp, and they are the Black Scale Guild. They are, I mean, everything has to have the word black in it because they think that's really funny. I mean, again, they started off as the Black Scale Guild because they had collected the scales of a black dragon that they had defeated, and they were using that as their symbol for their group. And that just kind of caught on, so everything became black something or other after that. Annoying. So it was a good idea to let them name stuff. Now, not so much. So anyway, I think I answered that question. That is a 62. And 62 is from somebody, anybody, Bueller. Here we go, 62. And 62 is from my brother Kyle. Hey, Kyle. Kyle says, well, okay, it says 39, because he had to start it with 39, because this was the 39th entry in his birthday gift to me, I think. No, it wasn't the birthday gift. It was more recent. It was when I was begging you guys for stuff. Anyway, 39. If you could be the main character in any animated Disney movie, who would it be and why? I like Mulan. I think that's a cool badass story. I could be Mulan. In any animated Disney story. I could also be Milo from Atlantis, because he was pretty cool too. He was a nerd hero, and I like that. Boy, I don't have any others right off the top of my head. I mean, they've all got their advantages. But I'm telling you, I think I'm going to go Milo. He's the most relatable to me right now. 18. 18 is Eliahad. Well, hey, Dave. Eliahad asks, Danielle of Danielle Ate the Sandwich has picked you to ghostwrite a song for her new album, but the song has to be about a particular town. You get to pick the town, but what town is it? Okay, first off, I know the name Danielle from Danielle Ate the Sandwich, but I can't remember what I've heard from her. So give me a moment while I check YouTube. Okay, got it. Danielle from Danielle Ate the Sandwich is a young woman who plays the ukulele and sings and apparently does lots of cover songs, which are pretty cool, and also does some original music. And so I'm going to have her write a song about a town. That's really your question. Yep, town. Okay, then I'm going to pick a fictional town of some sort. And it could be almost any fictional town. I mean, it could be, I think King's Landing from Game of Thrones would be a really cool town to write a song about. I think Cloud City from Empire Strikes Back would be a cool town to write a, does it count as a town? I'd say it does. That would be a cool one. Or, I mean, if we want to get really particular and she has to write a song that has almost no mass appeal whatsoever, she could write a song about Sandpoint, which is the fictional town from the Pathfinder game that we've been playing. That's our home base of operations, sort of, at this point. So any of those would be good. I think the King's Landing one would probably be best. I mean, is Game of Thrones stuff overdone? Is it? Maybe. But it, boy, there's so much that's rich and vibrant and interesting there, and lots of chances for little insider references that anyone who watches the show would get and feel really smart that they got, and it would be kind of cool. So, anyway, that would be my pick. 97 is... I've lost my mouse. Where's my mouse? There it is. I didn't lose the mouse. I don't have a mouse. I actually am using the trackpad, but I lost my mouse pointer. My mouse pointer. Okay. 97 is from Humongous again. Humongous asks, what do you think about fantasy stories that allude to a more advanced civilization that had fallen eons before the story begins? I.e. Shannara, Wheel of Time, Song of Ice and Fire. I don't have any problem with it. It's kind of tropey, kind of overdone. The idea that we once had an advanced civilization and now it's gone is pretty standard fare in a lot of fantasy and sci-fi. I mean, the idea that even, Star Wars a long, long time ago in the galaxy far, far away, implies that we've got this bizarre history that they are the huge advanced civilization from ages back. But even then, Star Wars itself, the original Star Wars was, descended from a higher culture before, and the idea that there's so much history and backstory that goes into Star Wars at this point in the expanded universe, it's just crazy. But it can be done well. Shannara kind of threw me off. I remember when I first read, which one's the first one? The Sword of Shannara? I think it was The Sword. The first time I read, well, the one time when I read Shannara, and I read just the one book, I remember being struck by that and realizing that, oh, they're on Earth. I get it. And we don't know what happened to old Earth, and we don't know how they came to this point where we're living in a world of magic and trolls and elves and the whole business. But apparently we are. And I thought that was kind of cool, but it's always stuck out to me as the first time that I really recognized that trope being used. And again, for the most part, I think it's overdone, and I think it should be avoided. But if you can find a way to use it that makes it original, then I'm good with that. I mean, we play Dungeons and Dragons, we play Pathfinder, and most of the worlds for D&D, Pathfinder, that kind of stuff, most of the worlds always imply some previous great civilization that now we just see the remnants of. And it adds a good air of mystery to things, and it's very cool. Heck, you know what? Even 2001 gives you that. I just realized. So, yeah, it can be done well. So I guess I don't have a real problem with it. There, how's that for a non-answer? 27. 27 comes from, let's see. Oh, no. Oh, one more. There it is. It's from Kyle. Hey, brother Kyle. Kyle says, 36. If you could go back in time, just to witness a single event for an hour. Assume you'd be invisible and ghost, so you wouldn't change anything or get yourself hurt, I assume. When would you go and where? I don't know, the Battle of Agincourt? The whole Band of Brothers speech? Because again, yeah, as much as Shakespeare may have dressed it up, it would be interesting to see because it was such a... I covered this, way back in episode... Was that episode 1 that I talked about the Battle of Agincourt? Was it? God, that's been a long time ago. but the idea that the English went in vastly outnumbered and outclassed and managed to pull victory out of the day without, I mean, at least according to the stories we've got, without even realizing until after it was all over that they had actually won, thinking that they were probably going to have to surrender, and then getting to accept the surrender of the French and realizing that they had won the day. I only get an hour, so I don't know how to pick the exact hour. You know, Kyle said I can only go back for an hour. I don't know how to pick the exact hour, but maybe to see the reactions at the end once they figure out that they've won, that would be kind of cool. It's not a perfect answer, but see, I'd also like to go back to 1066 because I love 1066. I've gone over that one before too. But again, I don't know exactly what moment in 1066 I want to go to. It's such a huge thing, but it was with the last time that England has been successfully invaded, the whole Norman conquest business. There's probably something cool there, but not really sure. There's probably much better answers. I'm sure you guys could come up with a whole list of things that you would name off and go, hey, but what if you went back and got to see this happen? And I'd go, oh wow, that is pretty cool. I should have thought of that in the first place. So, anyway, come up with some other answers for me. Submit them. 13. 13 comes from Ronster. Well, hey there, Ron. Ron says, Christmas tree. Cut or reusable? Oh, no, reusable. Seriously. Yeah, how? Dead pine needles in my house? Gross. I mean, live tree, well, or at least cut tree, smells, requires that I have, keep refilling the water on it. The allergies in my house, my wife, there's no way. No way. Man, we used to do that. We used to go every year. We had a nice little Christmas tree farm outside of town. We'd go out with the kids and tromp through the snow and pick one out that they would chop down for us, and we'd bring it on home. And no matter how well you picked that tree when you were out there, you always got it home and something was lopsided, something was crooked, something had a big old bald spot that you didn't even realize was there. It was never... I mean, and then you'd put all the decorations on and it would be magical and it would be the best Christmas tree ever. But yeah, everybody in the house would get all stuffed up and runny nose and ugh, gross. Whereas with the reusable tree, you only have to replace that every 10 or 12 years. And time to go set up. Let's go up to the attic, get it up, unfold it, put it in the stand. We're ready to go. Oh, that was the other thing. I also hate having to do the Christmas tree stand on a real tree. I just hated that. That whole... trying to bolt that trunk in to make sure the thing didn't tip over, and knew, hated that, hated it. I will go artificial tree every time, without a doubt. Heck, you know what? I'm getting old enough that the magic is, the little ones, we've still got some magic there, but it's almost to the point where, you know what? We really need a tree. Yeah, I know we need a tree. I know, let's put it up, but man, so much work. We have so many ornaments. After 20-some years of marriage, we have so many ornaments. There's so much involved in putting up a tree. And even if you're not going to put them all up, well, now you have to decide which ones go and which ones don't. Oh, darn it. I mean, how do you set any of those aside? They all have memories. That's actually, okay, and that's, I complain, but that's really the value of the Christmas tree is putting up the ornaments because the whole family gets together for it. And yes, the kids get really frustrated by the end because they really want to go do anything but this. But getting to unpack the ornaments and, just year after year, you're discovering, each ornament and, oh, remember when we got this and remember what happened? Oh, how this one broke and how, oh, there's a, it's really cool. It's always a trip down memory lane. It's very nostalgic to be putting ornaments on a tree. It's a really cool time. But yeah, definitely, definitely artificial tree. All the way. 77. 77 comes from Kyle again. And Kyle asks, 15. Every time I see Scarlett Johansson, I see the plain-faced girl from Ghost World. I don't see the sex bomb hottie that everyone else sees. Is this a malfunction in me? or in everyone else. It is definitely a malfunction in you, because the plain Jane girl from Ghost World that she was, and I had that same experience for a while, going, hey, it's that girl from Ghost World. Wow, she really, she has really changed. But again, I also, in seeing her in Ghost World, that's an attractive type to me anyway. That's when I was in high school, that's the girl I would have wanted to date. That, you know, nerdy, emo, eclectic, that kind of, and then I got her. You're absolutely right, Lisa. That was the kind of girl I would have been attracted to at that age anyway. So, to see her later, all growed up, she was just hot no matter what. So, doesn't bug me, man. I don't, if you're somehow, devaluing her as an attractive, you know, potential partner, however you're rating things, I don't understand. That's on you, man. You're just nuts. She's a beautiful, gorgeous woman. And while I still see the Ghost World girl in her, so what? So she grew up. Anyway, that's just me. 31 is, oh, darn it. I know, it's so hard to scroll up and down on a spreadsheet, isn't it? Aren't you guys glad you have the master of spreadsheet scrolling here to run things for you? 31 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, do you think images taken from a camera on a microscope could be considered art or simply a science tool? Oh, that's not even a question. Of course they can be art. Have you seen? Of course you have. You use microscopes all the time. And you're probably asking this question because you have often seen things in the course of the drudgery that is day-to-day science. Apparently, science involves lots of tedium and lots of waiting, as Noah said, all to get to that huge payoff when you have the huge discovery or you get final results that now you have the tedium of interpreting them. But again, all worth it. It all pays off because science is so cool. It sounds like maybe I'm just, you know, making stuff up when I say that, but that is a consistent answer from scientists in general, at least the ones that are willing to write stuff that I've read, where they say that, of course, there's all this mindless stuff that goes in between, but you have to put in the work to get to that payoff, and it's always worth it. And I imagine, to finish a sentence I started 2 or 3 minutes ago, in the drudgery and tedium of day-to-day science work and peering through microscopes and calculating and tabulating, I'm sure you have run across many of them that you've went, wow, that is really, you know, outside of the context of science even, boy, that is just a really cool picture. I'm sure you've seen that. There's got to be plenty of times that's happened to all sorts of people. So I would imagine that, pictures taken, digital pictures taken through a microscope, I would bet can be amazingly cool. And I am sure I have seen such things. I mean, do you remember, World Magazine? Is that the kids' version of National Geographic when I was a kid? I think it was World Magazine. And World always had that segment showing these huge blow-up pictures of something as seen either, you know, greatly magnified, seen through a microscope, whatever it was. And you would have to be looking at these close-up pictures of, you know, a bee's scales? Hide? What do you call a bee's skin? It's a close-up of a bee. It's a close-up of an orange. It's a close-up of whatever it is. And you had to guess what it was. Those were beautiful pictures. I mean, with the colors and the composition of them, a lot of those were very interesting, fascinating. And this would be, when you're looking through the microscope, same thing, but on a more magnified scale. So I imagine. 58 comes from Mrs. Darks again. She gets a twofer here. Mrs. Darks asks, 8, she says, rubber bands, staples, or paper clips, which is the superior paper taming device? I hate to say this, But it depends on your need, because binder clips are really, really awesome. Does that just count as a paper clip? Just a very advanced and super strong paper clip? Binder clips are the coolest, because you can hold lots and lots of stuff with a binder clip. I mean, you can hold, you know, depending on the size of your binder clip, if you've got 40, 50 pages that you just need to hold together and pass along somewhere, binder clip will do it without even blinking. You can't put a paper clip onto 40 or 50 pages. You can't staple 40 or 50 pages unless you go down to the office and you get down the big stapler with that huge swing arm that, oh man, such work. And half the time with the big industrial stapler, I go to whack that thing to ram it through 50 pages worth of stuff, and you're always afraid that you're gonna hit it wrong or not hit it hard enough, and it's gonna bend the staple in the middle, and oh great, now you have to pull that thing out and start all over again. So binder clip is my preference, but if it's just gonna be two or three pages, then I would prefer stapling, to tell the truth. I mean, again, paper clips have their purpose. I prefer to have them stapled so I know it's not gonna come apart. And oh, the other advantage of the binder clip, in case of an emergency, you can use them to hold your pants together, to hold your pants up in place of a belt. They are very, very useful. So, number 10. 10 is from my brother Kyle. Kyle says, 32. I've asked this before, but I'm going to keep asking it until I get the answer I want. So, you're not tired of the Marvel movies and their same formula yet? Really? Even just a little? Okay, that's cool. I'll check in later. No, not yet. It's getting there, okay? Look, in retrospect, all right, because all movies, when I see them with my family on the big screen, especially if it's a giant blockbuster, all movies are awesome while I'm there. And then in retrospect, afterwards, you look back and go, well, okay, but it could have been better. But look, Iron Man 3 was a bad movie. And I knew it was a bad movie right after I walked out of it. All right. Iron Man 3 was just not great. It was exciting. It was fun. I had a great time watching it, but it wasn't a great movie. Thor 2 was weak. I mean, again, a lot of fun, but kind of weak on the story. Avengers Age of Ultron could have been better. I like it, but it was very much on the formula that you're apparently complaining about. I get that, all right? I get all of that. So they've had some that, yes, while they are blockbusters, and yes, they're making them huge money, they are a little formulaic. They are getting along that same pattern. But you know what? Then I see Ant-Man, and while Ant-Man had some flaws, Ant-Man was a different take on the Marvel movie, and Ant-Man was different from the formula. Ant-Man did something completely new, and that was cool. And Daredevil, while again it's not a movie, it's not part of the cinematic experience, Daredevil on Netflix did something completely different. That is not part of the Marvel formula. I think their TV shows are going to give us really new stuff. And hopefully those TV shows inform the movies that come in the future. I mean, look at the dark conspiracy theory political tones that Captain America is taking. First Captain America, great, but Captain America Winter Soldier, where it's making, I mean, that's some real serious commentary on the state of the world. And that was really cool. And so, now looking forward to the next Captain America and Civil War. Oh, I can't wait. I really want to see what they do with it. So, hold on a second. I need to pause. And we're back! 50! Doesn't it feel like we did 50 already? Let's find out. 50 is from... Come on. There we go. It's from Ronster! We have not done this one yet. Ronster says, Thundar the Barbarian and cohorts... I'm sorry. You mean Ookla the Mock and Princess Ariel? All right. Thundar the Barbarian and cohorts versus the Party of Adventurers from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. Boy, I feel like we have answered this question before. I'm going to say Thundar, because Thundar and Ookla and Ariel are actually seasoned adventurers, warriors, etc. And the group from the D&D cartoon are a bunch of stupid kids who don't know how to use their abilities to their full extent yet, and therefore need to get their butts kicked. Granted, because they're kids, they'll probably wind up triumphing through some really, really clever scenario where they go, you know what we need to do here? And then they'll figure out something clever they do that plays into a weakness that we didn't even realize that the other team had. But, oh, look, now we win. But really, no, it should be Thundar. 63. I will say 63 is from Ronster again. Ron says, favorite salad dressing. Oh, that's so easy. Dorothy Lynch. If you do not have Dorothy Lynch where you live, and you probably don't, you are missing out. It is like French dressing, but it's French dressing. I don't know. Imagine you had a really good French dressing, and then you dumped 4 cups of sugar into it. That would be Dorothy Lynch dressing. It is a Midwest thing, and Dorothy Lynch dressing is amazing. And I know, saying dumping 4 cups of sugar into it makes it sound actually kind of awful, maybe. But it's not, that doesn't quite sum it up, but it's pretty close. It's a very sweet French dressing, and it's great. It's really good. When I used to wait tables at Perkins, people would come in, and they would ask us what kind of dressings we have for our salads, and we'd run through the whole list. And then when you got to after you read them all off, the person would invariably say, ooh, is your French Dorothy Lynch? And then you'd say, oh, no, I'm sorry, we don't carry Dorothy Lynch. And they'd say, oh, well, never mind that. So Dorothy Lynch, very popular around here. If I am in a part of the country or in a restaurant that does not carry Dorothy Lynch, then ranch probably, but I will also go Thousand Island dressing sometimes. Doesn't matter. Which I said Thousand Island dressing, and my wife suddenly got the chills. You could just see her whole body shake. I'm assuming that the idea of Thousand Island dressing just grosses her the hell out. So she says it's the equivalent of putting ketchup on your salad. No, it's the equivalent of putting ketchup mixed with mayonnaise on your salad, and that makes it awesome. So I don't know what her problem is. So anyway, Dorothy Lynch, if you can get it. But then otherwise, if not, ranch. Ranch is fine. So, you know, I could do that. Or better yet, skip the salad because salad is nasty anyway, and you could just have more of your main course. 45 is Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, do you have Pete's Coffee in Nebraska? If so, Pete's or Starbucks? Okay, I don't have Pete's Coffee, but I can answer this question anyway. Pete's, because Starbucks is awful. I don't like Starbucks. In fact, the problem, I don't really care for most of the coffee companies. We around here, we've got Starbucks, and we've got Scooters, and we've got, Brogy's. Yeah, we've got Brogy's. And there was some Java Point. I don't even know if it's a national chain or if it's just a local thing. I have no idea. And I've gotten coffee from all of them. And my problem is it's always overpriced, and it's just never that great. I mean, I have found every once in a while I'll find a flavor that I really, really like. But then to me, you know, it's if I find that particular flavor, it's really, really good. It's also a special treat sort of thing, because it's the kind of thing where if you're spending that much money on a coffee and it's got that much sugar in it and that much fat in it, I mean, it's like a dessert. That's got to be a special treat thing. I just like plain coffee. Just plain old coffee. Or sadly, the Monster Java flavors. Kona Point, or Kona Blend. That's the one. All right, I'm a sucker for the Kona Blend. But other than that, black coffee, come on. Black coffee, it's fine. So, but again, in this particular one, I don't think I've ever had a Starbucks coffee that I've liked. I've had coffees from other places that I've liked. But again, it's really tough to find. So I'll go with Pete's because I have no idea. 63. All right, I know we've done 63. This has got to be a repeat. 63 is, yes, we did. That was the salad dressing. Number 11. That one's a new one. So we got 11 is... from Mrs. Darks again. Mrs. Darks says, do you miss two spaces between sentences? No. No, I don't. You don't put two spaces between sentences. You only put one space. Two spaces is antiquated and is unnecessary. And, well, look, you can look at me like that all you want. Kyle's on your side. Go ahead. You and Kyle shack up together and enjoy your two spaces between sentences because, seriously, what's the point? And here's the thing. If you like two spaces between your sentences, go ahead and put them in there. Most modern word processors will wind up taking one of them out for you anyway. It just won't print. You just don't see it. So therefore, who cares? Come on. I mean, unless you want to get yourself a proportional font or whatever they call that, like Courier or whatever, then your two spaces will be really obvious and you'll look old and antiquated. Is that how you want to appear to the rest of the world? I mean, come on. Ultimately, and this is really, really relevant because Bloom County 2015, the new Bloom County comics coming out, Opus and Bill are running for president again. Bill is running for president. Opus is vice president. And Opus says, we need an issue. We need an issue that can divide the public, distract them from the real issues, and get everyone, you know, get your base worked up over some fake issue that you've created. And Opus decided that one or two spaces after a period. That would be the issue that they were going to divide people on. And it's a very funny series of comics. It's really cute. It's probably from about a week ago. So go look up Bloom County's new stuff and check out those because they're hysterical. Because it's ultimately, it really doesn't matter. If you like putting in two spaces, go ahead and put them in. Again, like you say, most word processors are just going to take them back out. But some of them don't, and sometimes it is obvious. And if that makes you feel good, then do it. It's not hurting me any. I only put in one. I only put in one because I'm lazy. So that's the way it works. 11 again. 46. That's a real number. 46 comes from Humongous. How far in are we? Oh, we're not even to an hour yet. So let's do Humongous and then maybe one more after that. And then we will move on to some listener betrayal. So Humongous says, do you use deities in your games? I have. I mean, I use deities in that if I've got a cleric, if I've got, you know, someone who is religious, they certainly have a deity, a god to look up to worship, to gain powers from, Zerangel! Because, which is after the whole, goblins fiasco down at Gen Con and the Zerangel business, my son Aiden, his goblin character, has decided that, okay, no, I'm changing my deity. I'm now a Zerangel worshiper. And now he has the opportunity to yell Zerangel, during our games. He doesn't very often, but every once in a while, when a situation warrants it, he's in there, especially if you're setting something on fire. But as far as having them as actual physical beings or beings that you can meet, talk to, deal with, fight, whatever, not so much. Again, I have done that in the past when I was younger, but excuse me, I don't know what's wrong with the throat. But not in a long time, and not in the last 15 years, maybe. Now it has to be longer than that. Not in 30 years, probably. So it's just something that is, there's some cool ideas and cool things you could do with it, but it also, it just seems so, I don't know, so overpowered. Because, again, I don't run high-level campaigns. I haven't run a high-level campaign since I was really young. So, therefore, it's hard to find a place to work in a deity where it's appropriate to their power level, and it lets them interact and do something that is meaningful other than just letting them watch the god show. So yeah, no, usually I don't use it. I don't have any problem with people who do, but, yeah, no, I wouldn't. 79 will be our last one, and it is from... No, too far. Yes, there we go. 79 is from Kyle. We'll finish up with my brother Kyle, who says... Okay, I'm going to give you a topic, and you have to give me the first three words you think of, okay? Okay. Free association. Don't think about it. Just rapid fire, okay? Got it? Yeah, I got it. Okay. Here's the word. Nambla. Okay. Sick, twisted perverts. There you go. I didn't answer fast enough. You made me laugh with the word, so I didn't answer fast enough for you. But let's see. Did you say misunderstood? Oh, God, I hope you didn't, but if you did, comedy gold! No, I didn't. Nor would I. There's nothing positive about that at all. I can't, in fact, discussing it any further is probably only going to be either depressing or somehow get me into trouble because I'll have some sort of verbal slip on the subject where you'll twist it into something that I didn't mean to say, and I'd like to avoid that. Let's do one more. Let's clear the palate after Kyle has to bring up such an unsavory topic. 50, been done. 33 is... It's from my brother Kyle again! And Kyle says, no, seriously, dude, NAMBLA. No, he doesn't say that. Kyle says, 20. I just saw Fury Road. I just saw Fury Road, he says in all caps. So good, right? Is this the new standard bearer for action movies? Doesn't it make all those Marvel formula movies look contrived and dumb? No, it doesn't do that. Although, it does for some of them, because again, there's good and there's bad. But Fury Road, awesome. I loved Fury Road. But you guys know I love Fury Road. You listened to the whole Fury Road episode a ways back. Fury Road's the greatest movie ever. Really, really good movie. Seriously, why are you gonna be sitting down on Marvel? You're determined to hate them ahead of the curve. I don't understand what your problem is. Look, they're gonna go downhill. I get that. They have to at some point. I'm hoping they find a way like Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man to a degree. Ant-Man's no Guardians of the Galaxy, but it was a cute movie. Or what they're doing with the TV series. I hope that stuff all comes together and it informs their planning, for the cinematic universe. And I hope we start seeing some stuff that isn't part of the same, standard formula. I'm hoping they find some stuff like Ant-Man, where again, Ant-Man still, they had to find a way that he's saving the world, with his actions. But I hope they can find some stories that can fit in their movies that don't have to be saving the world every single time. It doesn't have to be cataclysmic and world-shattering, but it can still be just as important in its own way. I mean, emotionally, you don't need to save the world to tell a story. You know, you don't need to save the world to tell a story that gets people emotionally invested. So, look, I agree that this formula will get them in trouble eventually. It has to. All right. But for right now, they're making a ton of money on it. So, they'll carry it out as long as they can. We'll see what happens. So, seriously, don't be so negative. Can't you just sit back and enjoy stuff? Why do you feel like you have to do this? Is there something you want to talk about, Kyle? Because I'm here for you. I'm here anytime you need me. Okay. All right. Enough of that. We are done with the Podomatic, and it is time for GLaDOS to come on out and give us a recap of the episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music, I didn't use any, but when I do, all the bumper music I use is available on iTunes. You check it out, you buy it, you enjoy it, because, you know, I wouldn't put it in my podcast if I didn't love it. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, go to pocketmod.com, get instructions for printing and folding your very own pocket mod for free. You want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. Word of mouth. If you enjoy it, let other people enjoy it, please. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. And if you want to contact me, I am available at mike@nerdprideradio.com, Facebook.com/nerdprideradio, Twitter @nerdprideradio. But as I always tell you, the very best way to contact me, you want to get in touch with me, you want to hang out with me, you want to just rap, can we be friends? That's right. You come to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. I'm not going to do that. Now it's time for Listener Betrayal. This is how we close out every show. Before I start, I post up on Facebook and on my website, nerdprideradio.com/forums, and I post up that I'm recording, and then whatever you guys decide to reply and comment to those, I read it right here. So let's find out what you guys said. I had to go out in the hallway, pull it up on my phone, start from my website. Listener Betrayal 108. Okay, first off, just so I don't forget, this was a comment that Mrs. Darks put in on my last podcast, but I think she put it in just a bit too late, and it wound up not getting read. So Sarah Beth says, "Hi, Mike. Have you ever read, listened to, or watched something fictional, something, and then in parentheses, fictional, something so scary that you could never let yourself go through it again? If so, what?" Okay. Something so scary that I could never let myself go through it again. I'm not quite sure how to interpret that question. Do you mean something so scary like watching Jaws and then deciding that you can never go to the beach again? Or do you mean something like so scary that you could never watch that movie again? Probably the former, but we'll find out from context with the rest of your posts. My wife has one. Hold on. Okay, my wife has reminded me of the single most intense horror movie I think we've ever watched together, or that I've ever watched at all, Grace. If you've not seen Grace, you probably shouldn't. It is disturbing. It is it's not like, and not like Eli Roth hostile torture style porn sort of horror movies are disturbing, because those are also disturbing. The idea where you've got the again, torture porn stuff where it's just hopelessness. It's just torture for torture's sake. It's not scary. It's just horrifying. And especially when it's a situation where the person being tortured has no hope. I mean, it's just a complete helpless sort of, like, Audition. Audition is another one that just seems so overwhelmingly bleak and hopeless that I can't, okay, Audition, I'm glad I watched it, to have said I watched it, but Hostel, not so much. But Grace is different. Grace is this creepy, God, I can't even tell you. It's bad. It's bad. I'll tell you, it involves a dead baby. That's not giving you anything away, because you're going to see that right away. It is a disturbing movie to watch. And it is one that I will never see it again. In fact, I feel bad even bringing it up and talking about how intense it was, for fear that some of you will go watch it, and you probably shouldn't. Really shouldn't. Now, as far as the idea of a horror movie that, or horror anything, that sets me up so that I can't go do whatever that thing is, because I would associate that activity with the horror movie, and thus I'm too scared to go do it, that has never happened to me, at least not that I can think of. Or if it did when I was younger, it's not something that bothers me now. So I don't think so. But let me see. From the rest of your comment, what else goes along with this? All right, so here's your story. Here's Sarah Beth's story. She says, "I love old-time radio shows. I consider myself quite an old-time radio nerd. I enjoy old-time radio shows. I don't listen to, Yancey actually listens to them way more often than I do. And he will wind up pointing out episodes that I should check out. And so I often do. But anyway, I once listened to one so scary I had to run downstairs to my parents. I was like 14 at the time. It was an episode of Quiet Please entitled The Thing on the Forble Board. I wanted to get over it and tried to listen to it today and couldn't even get through the non-scary first 5 minutes of it." Really? Okay, so all right, then Grace does fit into the category of stuff you're talking about here. "A quick Wikipedia search shows that it is considered one of the scariest radio programs of all time. It's available on YouTube or quietplease.org if you're interested. Quiet Please in general was really great if you like supernatural horror shows. The podcast lore inspired all of this ramble. Waiting for a new episode to drop made me remember it all. It's so good." Wow. High praise and recommendation indeed. So I will check out Quiet Please, and I will check out that episode in particular, which maybe, you know, this is now, you know, I'm a 45-year-old man, not a 14-year-old girl, so I probably won't have the same kind of reaction I would have if I had listened to it when I was 12 or 13 or 14 myself. So maybe it won't have the same emotional impact it did for you, but it sounds like it is certainly worth a listen. I will give it a shot. All right, then Kyle says, Mike, what is up with orchestra jocks? The worst, right? Always threatening to beat you down with an epic solo, slapping each other on the ass with bowstrings. The worst! Oh, couldn't agree more. It is, seriously, try hanging out with Dave for a weekend. Oh my God, the guy is insufferable. All right, next. Talvin says, have I mentioned recently how awesome DM Darks is? Because he is awesome! And Sarah Beth is awesome as well, allowing her husband to dungeon master for us and even joining us for a while. Yeah, Sarah Beth's been playing, she's been playing Shalilu on alternate Thursdays with us as part of our Pathfinder. Apparently, we need a guide for some reason, so she gets to be it. And yes, DM Darks is awesome. Talvin then adds, what do you think is on the Nazi gold train in Poland? I have no idea. Nazi gold? I don't know. I'm not familiar with this one, but I'm going to go, my vote is Nazi gold. There you go. Talvin then says, as a lover of dice and Pathfinder, have you seen the Kickstarter for the metal Pathfinder dice? I have seen Pathfinder dice. I've seen the Kickstarter for the metal ones. I've seen them in plastic versions. We saw them at Gen Con. I don't like them. I don't like them. I mean, I would love to own them just because it would be cool to own them. They are very cool looking. But for me, Pathfinder dice are unusable because they're too busy. There's too much crap on every face. It's too ornate and too overworked, and therefore the numbers are not as easily readable as I want numbers to be on dice. When I throw dice, I want to see them, and I should be able to instantly recognize what I'm looking at. I've got the number in my head. I can move on with it and use it for whatever it's needed for. For the Pathfinder dice, again, too much ornate crap on them, and it's just not workable for me. So, not a fan. And then I say done! So we're finished with the website portion of it. Now let's go out to Facebook and see what we've got out there. It was quite a bit. Okay. First up, Nelly on Facebook says, do you like exploring Artist's Alley at Gen Con? I do. Do you enjoy fantasy art at all? I also do. Although, my problem with fantasy art in general is a lot of it, I don't know, there's a certain style to it that can feel a little trite, or it feels like you're trying too hard. Some of that classic, the classic stuff, the covers of Dragon magazine back in the day, the posters, there's some of it that can feel a little trite and overdone. And while I enjoy good fantasy art, and it's the kind of thing that, now that I think about it, I've got quite a number of them that I use as wallpapers on my computer, stuff like that, but I don't actually own any. I don't have any fantasy art that I hang up anywhere. Mostly because I don't have a whole lot of art that I hang up anywhere. So, that's a lot of it too. But, I enjoy fantasy art, but I'm not particularly a connoisseur of it. I'm not one who, I'm not particularly knowledgeable on the subject. But, all right, Nelly continues. What are some of your favorite artists? Again, I don't know. I'm not an expert. Or alternatively, she asks, what RPG or game have you really enjoyed the artwork for? Huh. That's pretty good. I'm not sure. I really like the current Pathfinder art. It's all very distinctive and very obviously Pathfinder, but I think I like it because I remember it was very distinct when Pathfinder first came out, that they obviously were going for a very distinct art style that separated them from other fantasy games, and particularly separated them from Dungeons and Dragons. But I've played Pathfinder so much, and I'm so familiar with it, that I think that engenders a lot of my love for that style. I mean, it's good artwork, don't get me wrong, but it's also very distinctively Pathfinder, and because I like Pathfinder so much, I really enjoy the artwork for it. But outside of that, I don't know, there's some games like, how many years did I play Shadowrun? And some Shadowrun art was really cool and really good. They had lots of good covers and stuff like that, but then they also had some really cheesy interior stuff. It just depended on the product. Some of it was high quality and some of it was not so much. So, and I think a lot of games that aren't Pathfinder, Dungeons and Dragons, the really, really big name ones, I think a lot of them suffer from that because, you know, when you're trying to make a buck, sometimes it is really hard to crank out that same level of quality over and over. So, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. Like I say, I'm not an expert. But, yeah, I don't mind it. I enjoy good fantasy art. I enjoy good sci-fi art. All right. Next post on Facebook comes from Sarah Beth. Sarah Beth says, "Hey, Mike, how you doing today?" "I am awesome. I hope you had a good week." "I did." And then she adds in parentheses, "even if I'm an ass." You weren't an ass. Don't worry about it. She's referring to the comment that I read at the very beginning. That was her Facebook one from last week that I missed. And basically she came back with a, "Dude, what the hell? Where's my post?" And then realized that, oh, it must have got mixed up somewhere in there. And she keeps apologizing for it. Seriously, don't. Things happen. Because it hasn't been said in a while, how awesome is DM Darks? Oh, God, that guy is great. I don't know how often you get to hang out with DM Darks, Mrs. Darks, but I've spent some time with him, and he is spectacular. Love that guy. Have you listened to his podcast, Me Like Trivia? Oh, awesome. I love that thing. The only thing that would make Me Like Trivia better is if it came out more often and if every episode had a half hour of them just joking around with each other. I love their conversations. Those guys are entertaining. Sarah Beth, if you have not checked out Me Like Trivia, you really should. Great stuff. And then Dave. Hey, it's Eliahead. Dave says, "I'm on an airplane." Wow, you're posting from an airplane? That is so cool. "Tell us a story about your harrowing adventures flying." Let's see. The first flight I remember in my life, when I was very little, I remember someone, and I think it was Kyle. Could have been me for all I remember, but I'm pretty sure it was Kyle. I remember someone throwing up chocolate milk on the plane. Pretty sure that was Kyle. Yeah, it had to be, because I wouldn't do something like that to my mom. But yeah, my dad had gone on ahead of us, and so it was, this is back when my dad was in the Air Force, and so it was my mom flying with two small children. I mean, I couldn't have been, but 4 years old. So it's my mom flying with two small children, and somebody, I think, threw up chocolate milk on the plane. Mom, you will have to post up and remind me about this because I cannot remember. But man, that sounds really familiar. Let's see. But that's not so harrowing. I've never had a harrowing plane experience, other than, look, missing connections, especially when you're traveling overseas. My parents were in Japan for quite a long time with the Air Force, and so I flew back and forth for holidays and summers and stuff. And when you do that much flying back and forth overseas, especially when it's flights are being paid for and arranged by the military, sometimes the connections aren't as reliable as you want them to be. So, wound up spending a night in a St. Louis airport, the St. Louis International Airport. I wound up spending a night in LAX once, sleeping on a bench. So, missing your flight was really the most harrowing thing that generally happened to you. But I will tell you that flying back from Japan with my brother, we came back together 1 year when we were both in college, and we had the greatest time on that flight. Oh, it was so much fun. We wound up going to the, we were in the airport in Japan, in Tokyo, and we had a while to wait for our flight. So we went down to the bar there, and we ordered some Kirin, which is a very dry Japanese beer, and I like Kirin. They used to sell it in the States. I don't know if they still do. Anyway, I think they do. We loved Kirin. And so we wound up drinking, I can't remember. I want to say 6 of those each, but maybe I'm exaggerating. But the problem is that in Japan, the bottles are much bigger than here. And I would swear they were stronger, but who knows. And we were really relaxed and really happy by the time we got on the plane. That was the best flight back ever. Wow. Because I barely remember any of it. I remember us just giggling and playing some cards and watching some movies and sleeping almost the whole way. We had the plane almost to ourselves. It was great. It was one of those where it's overseas, so it's a good 18-hour flight. and there was virtually nobody on it. So it's the kind of thing where you've got the middle seats, you got five of them all together, and you can just put the arms up and just stretch out across all five seats and take a nap. It's all yours, man. That's a cool way to fly. Let's see. Dave then adds, I'm coming back from a wedding. Make Lisa tell us a story about your wedding. Hey, Lisa, since you're here, would you come over and tell us a story about our wedding? Lisa? Lisa seems to be really busy, but I think she might come over. Hold on a minute. Go ahead, Lisa. It's all yours.
I have to talk about a story from our wedding or the wedding we went to this weekend?
It says a story from your wedding, so it's our wedding.
Okay, first of all, we had the best wedding ever. Lots of people have said that it was the perfect day. Everything went perfect. It was a beautiful day. Everybody had fun. Both old and young were all out dancing.
It really is. Of all the weddings I've been to, it was the most fun. Absolutely the most fun. She is right.
And I cannot thank our parents enough, because it was because of them that it was so much fun. The ultimate story from our wedding, I can't share online.
That's fine. Now you've screwed up. You told them that there's a story you can't tell them. They will never let me forget that. Skip that.
It'd be kind of ironic if I told it online.
It would.
And Kyle knows the story.
Right. It would be, in fact, the same story that got edited out of the Animal Cast many years ago when we removed many minutes of the Drunk Cast. It's that same story. All right, so anyway. But you guys don't need to know that one.
I think you've already told the story.
It doesn't matter.
I feel dumb telling it again.
No, I repeat myself all the time on this podcast. Because
you repeat yourself all the time everywhere.
I know. There's lots of people who haven't heard these stories, and it's way cooler coming from you.
Okay. We're blessed with a very large and very close family. And our very large and close family helped us celebrate our wedding and had lots of people there. And usually people put cans and boots on the back of a car, but not our family. Our family put not just one bag, several bags of rice in Mike's little CRX car that we were going to drive. And so we get into the car. It is totally filled with rice. Help me.
Wait.
Okay. So we get into the car. There's no time to get it all out of there. So we drive all the way to go to our honeymoon with rice in the car. And so then we get to our destination. We get on the ship. We go to change clothes. Well, not only had they filled the car with rice, our luggage was filled with rice. And I had included an iron in there in case my clothes got dirty. The iron was filled with rice, so every time I needed to iron anything, the whole room smelled like steamed rice.
It was awesome. Every time you used the steam function on it, steamed rice.
So, and not only did the car always smell like rice after that, from that day on, it smelled like stale, icky, yucky rice every time you got into it. The minute you turn on the blower, it would blow rice in your face. So it was like getting married all over again and having rice thrown in your face for until we sold the car 10 years later.
Exactly. Now, to clarify, last time I told this story, my brother corrected me because I've always blamed my dad. I was told it was my dad who directed everybody to do that. And apparently it was Darren Bruck. I will name him by name. Apparently, everyone else was just putting it in our luggage, which was really effective. We open up our luggage and pull our stuff out, and rice flies all over the cabin on the ship. It was very funny. That was effective, and that was what it was supposed to do. But apparently Darren is the one who dumped it in the vents of the car. That's the story I've been told now. And that's not just my dad covering his own ass. That is my brother backing him up on that it was not him, it was Darren.
And I did not know that until this minute.
Really?
I still thought it was your dad.
I know. That's why you've always hated my father.
No, I love your father.
I know you do. I'm kidding. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. That was awesome. All right. See? There. All you have to do is ask for Lisa and she'll show up. Now you guys know that for future episodes. She may never come back. That makes her very nervous. Public speaking is not her thing. Let's see. Next on Facebook is from, this is from Akiva. Akiva says, I have nothing to say. I just want you to read my comment during the show. Oh, I should have pre-read this so I could skip it. Wouldn't that have been hysterical? And then Akiva would be the only one who knew that. Hey, look. And then there's a Facebook comment from my wife, who has just been sitting across the room from me this entire time and apparently decided to add to the podcast there. Lisa says, I think you should share the story told at the fire by our dear friend and relative and her problem with her child's hand washing. Don't use names. Well, all right, fine. Then I will make up a name for her. I will. No. It's fine. It's fine. This is a relative and her 14-year-old son who I will just name, let's call him Josh, which is not his name, but let's call him Josh for purposes of this story, because I haven't asked their permission to relate their story, on the air. But their family did some volunteer work, where they were, helping. It was, I can't remember exactly what it was, whether it was a soup kitchen or it was putting meals together for, the underprivileged or whatever it was, but it involved working with food and getting stuff ready. And she said, you know, every time they do this, by the time they get done, the whole family is just filthy and they go home and they have to shower up right away. And it's just, it's very intensive putting all this together. And she said this time, for whatever reason, they decided they were going to stop and get fast food on the way home. And they were stopping in the restaurant to actually eat there. Before they went, I can't remember if it was home or wherever they were going. So they hadn't cleaned up yet. And so they get to the restaurant, and as they're sitting down to the table, Josh says he needs to go to the restroom. And she's like, well, and have you washed up yet even? And he's like, no. All right, well, then make sure you get clean because you're disgusting. You really, you know, make sure before you touch your food, come on. And so he goes off. Then the little girl also has to go to the restroom. And so she gets up to take her daughter to the restroom. And on the way, she passes by the men's room. She kicks open the men's room door, to yell in there, Josh, make sure you wash your hands when you're done, all the way up to your elbows. Don't forget. And as she does this, she realizes she's looking at not only is Josh in there at a urinal, but there's two guys, one on either side of him, and they're all three peeing. So, and she was mortified, but not nearly as mortified as he was. I thought that was hysterical. We had a good laugh over that one. And of course, look, to me, the proper response to that, if you were him, is to sit there, don't even move, don't look up, just finally look at the other guys and go, so which one of you is Josh? See, that would have been funny, but no, instead he has to just duck his head and of course wash his hands all the way up to his elbows before getting back to the table, because you're certainly not going to skimp out on it after that. So anyway, that was our story. That was one of the many awesome stories last night. It was also an awesome story of, one of the guys, a cousin who, oh, this guy is great. He's a good storyteller to start with, and he's just always a fun dude. And he's talking about something about freckles, and because he's a ginger and lots of freckles, and he wound up, he says, oh yeah, you can take them off with fire, you got to burn them off. And so we're like, what are you talking about? And so he relates the story of how it was the day after his wedding. I didn't even catch that. The day after his own wedding, he apparently is trying to start a fire, and this is in a fire pit they have a fire pit in their backyard, and so he goes to say, he stacks up the firewood, he gets everything ready, doesn't have any lighter fluid, he decides, well, of course, if you don't have lighter fluid, let's use some gasoline. And so he puts the gasoline on it, and then he goes to put the gas can away because clearly he's not an idiot. He's going to get the gas can away from the fire before he starts it. And in the process of walking across the yard to put the gasoline away in the garage and then walking all the way back, the gasoline has now had time to drip off of the wood, and so there's a little pool of liquid gasoline at the bottom, but above that is then the cloud of gasoline fumes that have settled on top of the liquid. So he leans in with his little torch thing to go to light it, and should be mentioned he had about a half a bottle of rum in him at the time. Leans in with his torch to go light it. It ignites the gas fumes on top, explosively so that when they go, boom, and the flame goes shooting up in the air, but the pressure of the flames exploding from where his point of ignition also splashed the liquid gasoline at the bottom, so it goes racing up his arm. And, I mean, it winds up splashing all the way up his arm to his shoulder. So from from his wrist to his shoulder along the back of his arm is now on fire, and he winds up running across the yard. And he said, and again, tragic at the time. I mean, third-degree burns. Don't get me wrong. This was horrifying at the time, apparently, but I didn't hear about it at the time. I only hear now, and I hear him telling it, and the way he tells it, it's hysterical. He says, look, doesn't matter what you've learned your entire life. It doesn't matter what they tell you. When you have lit your body on fire, stop, drop, and roll doesn't even enter into your head. Apparently, what does enter into your head is I should flail this flaming limb about as much as possible to try and put the fire out, which only made things worse. And he wound up waving his arm so much that he kept waving his arm. I mean, holding it all the way up and then putting it all the way down. He's waving his arm. He wound up waving the fire across his face so much that he wound up getting first-degree burns across his face. Took off his eyebrow. Fortunately, he's already bald and shaved, so he didn't singe off all the hair on the top of his head, but he wound up, I mean, the whole side of his face, bright red, swelled up, and eventually they got him put out, and third-degree burns, and then he had all sorts of less funny stories about getting that cleaned up and scrubbing away the dead flesh, and that's pretty tragic. He says, now, yeah, I got some scar tissue there, and all the freckles on that arm are gone. So if you need to take them off, that's the way to do it. Holy cow. So anyway, do I have anything else on Facebook? That was from my wife. So, and then that's it. Then I posted up done, and we're all done. So, you guys have a good week. Say goodnight, Lisa. Good night, Lisa. Say goodnight, R2. We're out.